Welcome back to What's at Risk. I'm Mike Christian.
See the sky about to rain.
Scott Singer, author of How to Hit a Curveball, has this to say about staying positive when you're in the midst of striking out. I've learned that most of the curveballs we're thrown, while problematic or maybe even traumatic, are not apocalyptic. Setbacks are rarely ruinous unless we choose to view them that way. Curveballs are just a part of life and now an increasing part of business. In baseball, the slate is wiped clean every time you're at bat. You can strike out multiple times in a row and then come up in the bottom of the ninth and still hit a game-winning homer. From the movie Major League. Bats, they are sick. I cannot hit curveball. Straight ball I hit very much. Curveball, bats are afraid. I ask Jobu to come, take fear from bats. I offer him cigar, rum, he will come. You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff. Jesus, I like him very much, but he no help with curveball. You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Here's a pitch, it's a slow curve low, and the Babe swings. It's a long one going out toward right center. Singer was backing up against the wall. He can't get it. It's in there. Another home run for the Bambino. So the Babe hits his second home run.
As a professional, you want to be ready for anything. You'll spend hours, days, even years perfecting your technique, studying the competition, and stepping up the challenges in order to make yourself an all-star. But at some point in your life, regardless of what you do or how far up the ladder you've climbed, you'll be thrown a curveball, an unexpected challenge that comes at you quickly and without warning, the kind that forces you to rethink everything. Whether it's the loss of a job, a newly assigned responsibility at work, or a global recession that threatens your entire company or industry, an unanticipated change can knock even the most experienced among us off guard. So if you want to succeed in business and in life, it's not enough to be the smartest person in the room, or even the hardest working. You have to be a great curveball hitter.
Steve, right! You're out!
Out of my...
When we're very young, our parents understandably go out of their way to protect us from as many of life's pains and problems as they can. And as we get older, our schools and public institutions do their best to smooth our way. Then, when we reach adulthood, we find ourselves in a fully functional world in which things tend to work right. You flip the switch, the light goes on, you go to the store and you have what you need. As a result, most of us are not as resilient as people who faced adversity early in life or who live in environments where things don't always work as planned. The good news is that resilience is something we can all learn without having to go through terrible traumas.
Maybe all I need is one good hit. Just when I think I thought I knew it all, now changes have been closed me a curveball. And I take a swing, but I always miss it.
Technology and communications are changing everything for both businesses and consumers. It's not just that rapid advances in technology are changing the way we each do things, they are rewriting the business models on which entire industries are based. Businesses need to focus on what they do and do best and not fixate on how they used to do it. At the same time, businesses need to understand that consumers are going through the same transformation. People are focusing on what they want and adopting new products and technologies faster than ever before. Scott Singer, who is a highly regarded investment banker in the media and entertainment field, went from master of the universe at Bear Stearns to being fired and eventually watching his marriage fall apart.
Now if you feel that you can't go on, because all of your hope is gone.
During During his career, Mr. Singer has emerged as the change expert, focusing on corporate finance, M&A, and strategic advisory transactions totaling over $110 billion for such clients as Cablevision, CBS, Charter Communications, Comcast, Discovery, Hollinger International, Liberty Media, and NBC Universal.
We're speaking with Scott Singer, the author of How to Hit a Curveball, Confront and Overcome the Unexpected in Business. You were hit by a series of personal events that inspired you to write this book, and it seems like the pace of change in the country and maybe the world is accelerating for all of us now, but it also seems like we don't really roll with the punches that easily anymore. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that we've become a lot less resilient than perhaps previous generations have been, as well as folks in other areas of the world. We have, in the United States, and certainly the benefit of the fact that, for the most part, more or less everything works according to plan. You go to the grocery store and the ingredients for tonight's dinner are there. You go to the hospital and they have the drugs that you need or a specialist for you, should you need that in case of an emergency. You know, the lights turn on, the buses work, all of those things. But in many parts of the world, a lot of things that we take for granted, like just plain old electricity and plumbing and all of that, don't work. And we're somewhat the victims of our own success as a culture and a country where things do go according to plan, so that when they don't, like they did in this last, you know, great recession, clearly with the mortgage crisis and banking crisis and automobiles and advertising and you name the sector, whether it's that or even just in our daily personal lives, when our BlackBerry doesn't work, we really fall off the deep end.
Yeah, kind of sad. I guess the more you have, the more you hold on to it, right? The more stressed
you
are when something happens to it.
It's all understandable, but as a result, that's what makes hitting a curveball or learning that skill that probably our relatives that are older than us or our fellow citizens in other areas of the world where, you know, the things go on strike all the time or, you know, the electricity's out or something, they look at us probably, I suspect, as a little spoiled, but at the same time, we've had the good fortune of making things work pretty well.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit more resilient than we are.
You know, in your opinion, what's the normal reaction when we're throwing a curveball?
Normal depends upon the individual, but in my research, I've learned that the vast majority of the time, people tend to, and I'll continue to use the baseball metaphor, although this is not a baseball book, they fight with the umpire. They point to someone or something else that was the reason for this unexpected event or their failure to accomplish or achieve a particular goal, whether it's, you know, that person didn't hit their sales targets and therefore I couldn't reach, you know, whatever it was I was supposed to do, or the economy did this, or oil prices did that, or the supplier didn't, you know, deliver the raw materials on time, or whatever it happens to be. Then there's a small group that tends to get depressed, get stuck like, you know, the deer in the headlights, and falls into a place of inaction. And then there's the third group, which is the group of people that I interviewed throughout the book, the people that inspired me, and I wanted to know what was it that they had that seemingly the rest of us didn't. And those are the people who, again, using that metaphor, stepped up to the plate, who said, what happened, happened. There's not much I can do about it to change what has happened, but what I can do is go into a positive, forward-thinking action mode about what I should do about it. And at some point in time, there'll be an appropriate time and place to go assess how I got there. But when you're in the middle of something, the trick is to confront it straight on.
Does it help just to naturally be an optimist?
Absolutely. Although, you know, I would venture to say, for the most part, the vast majority of people are optimists. You know, we all can probably point to the few folks in our lives that we see as pessimists. But that said, even us optimists look around and we believe in Murphy's Law, that whatever can go wrong will go wrong. And we buy those calendars for our desks and we chuckle. But at the same time, really, the bottom line is that I think it's somewhat in our DNA that when we expect or we hear something, we tend to jump to the negative. Rarely when you get call, you know, on the telephone or down the office from your boss to say, come on down here, I want to speak to you, do you jump to the conclusion that, oh, I'm going to get wonderful praise. You know, we assume that, what did we do? And you brace yourself. It's just as likely that something positive could occur, or you could be getting more responsibilities or a promotion, but that never seems to enter into our mind. And so we sometimes sabotage our own success because we build that anxiety in there. And I think it happens simply because, going back to when we were cavemen and women, you know, when we were exiting the cave, there were woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and other such things that were the top of the food chain. We weren't. And we were somewhat defensive about how we approached the world. We even always say the best offense is a good defense. It is, you know, just part of our culture.
Do you think people have a tendency to go it alone when they're in times of great stress instead of, you know, looking at reaching out for help and bringing people into their sphere?
Well, I think the successful people reach out to others for help. I know that when I faced some of my own challenges back in the early 2000s that caused me to think about how I was doing things and how I was doing things not so well when I had previously had a career and a life that seemed to be just, you know, despite things not always being perfect, it was a nice series of leaps forward and sometimes upward. But when I was confronted with the tough stuff, I was embarrassed. I didn't reach out fully to everyone that I could. I essentially hid. I tried to solve the problem before anyone found out. And I think that's a natural reaction for many people, because explaining the fact that something happened, it may have been out of our control, but, you know, we assume others judge us by what has transpired around us, and that as a result, we hold that situation negatively. The bottom line is, a lot of times, a lot of the events that are happening are beyond your individual control. You happen to be a victim of what change may be. Sometimes you can foresee some of that change and have made different decisions, but you probably had the best intentions at heart when you did make the decisions that you made. And so mistakes happen. We tell our kids all the time, is it a big mistake or a little mistake? Sometimes they are big mistakes, but reaching out for help, and I think this is generally something that in my research I've found women tend to do better than men, because they have much more of a dialogue with each other and a dialogue with sort of the environment around them. They're very cognizant of what's going on. Men tend to stick to themselves and believe, just like myself, you know, I can handle this. I can handle it, you know, on my own. That said, men are among the first to go and analyze every single play of a football game, every single play of a basketball game, you know, rehash absolutely everything that happens, go seek, you know, consultants, investment bankers, lawyers, what have you, specialists in medicine. But when it comes to dealing with whether it be our careers, our personal lives, or something like that, we tend not to really look around and get others' opinions.
You'd think in America, though, we'd all be a little more tuned into it, because we really all collectively were throwing a curveball with 9/11, right? I mean, it may have infected certain people more personally, but really as a nation, that was a real curveball.
It absolutely was, and it affected me as well. My brother just so happened to be coincidentally at a meeting in the World Trade Center that day. And that was the first of sort of three events that happened to me that really caused me to rethink my life.
Right.
You know, what we assumed was that our borders were otherwise secure, with the exception of a random, you know, sad event in Oklahoma City or some other place, or obvious natural disasters where none of us are in control. By and large, we thought we were pretty well protected within this country, and that shook that sense of safety all the way down to its foundation. And the anthrax attacks that happened after that only further exacerbated the sense of anxiety around the country.
From Curveball Prodigy by Jim Murray, the famous Los Angeles Times sports writer. The deuce, the players call it. The snake, the shrike. Public enemy number one, Roy Campanella named it. It's what makes the game difficult. The 250 hitters wish it could be outlawed like the spitball. It keeps the road to the minors clogged with disappointed youngsters, and it keeps the Hall of Fame roomy. The Bureau of Standards and several generations of people with photoelectric cells say it doesn't even exist. It's an optical illusion, like the lady cut in half by the great Blackstone, or the ace of spades that disappears before your eyes. To which Casey Stengel retorted, "You see, it fools even them machines." We used to call it the drop, or the in-shoot, or the out-shoot. Frank Merriwell had a double in-shoot, but that was only in the books. They called Christy Mathewson's the fadeaway. They're all describing the same thing, the ever-loving curveball. A ball thrown with spin instead of straight velocity. It rotates at a rate of 600 revolutions a minute and veers from the horizontal as much as 19 inches. A good one is impossible to hit. The heck it don't curve is baseball's battle cry. The first curveball was thrown by a character named Arthur Cummings with the Brooklyn Excelsiors in 1866. He was like a guy on a riverboat with his own dice for a while, but it was like hiding a joke at a comedian's convention. Plagiarism was soon widespread. We're here with Scott Singer, co-author of How to Hit a Curveball.
You talk in your book about overcoming impulsiveness and becoming more conscientious. Can you expand on that a little bit?
You know, one of the things that I think people tend to do, and again, I put myself in this camp as well, which is how I learned not to, because I was assessing what I didn't do right. And again, that's what curveballs are, just to step back a little bit. You know, when things don't go well, we assess what happened and we make adjustments. When things are going well all the time, we tend not to question why they're going well. And so we don't have that learning loop, if you will. One of the things that I talk about, as you said, is not to be so impulsive. One of the things that we tend to do is want to fix things quickly. We want to make snap decisions. And it is extremely important to pause and take the time and think about, you know, what happened, why, and what you can do about it, or what you should do about it rather than what you can do, because one of the things that you can easily ask yourself is, if you say, what can I do? The answer could be nothing. So that's not really the most empowering question to ask. But being more focused, being more thoughtful, stepping, what I say, outside the batter's box, which we all know the phrase, step outside the box, look at things from a different perspective. And it goes back to, again, getting other people's points of view is an extremely important component to be able to analyze the situation and then move forward, hopefully, with a better, smarter, and therefore more informed decision and action process.
I know your book has examples of leaders and others, just not necessarily leaders, but people who have bounced back from, you know, really devastating situations. Can you give us a couple of examples?
Sure. I mean, I've interviewed folks, you know, everyone from the chairman of CBS Corporation, Leslie Moonves, to Buzz Aldrin, astronaut who was among the first two to land on the moon, to Michael J. Fox, who obviously is suffering Parkinson's disease, to individuals like you and me. And the theme that, you know, I learned, a couple of themes that I learned. One was that learning how to hit a curveball is something that, in fact, you can learn how to do. Those that do it well generally have had something, some experience, early on in their career or their personal life that has taught them to put things in perspective and face things in a little different way. But if you haven't, still, there are some very easy steps, which I outline in the book, and I suggest people go to hitacurveball.com, which is my website, where you can see some of that in a bit more detail. And it puts you in a more empowered place. But the other theme that I learned is that regardless of who you speak with, no matter how successful they are, they have probably suffered some sort of failure in their career or scholastically or a challenge in their personal life. And despite the fact that their bios may read like they're superhuman, they are human, just like the rest of us, and nobody makes every decision perfectly. And as a result, that's something to learn from as well, that even the best of us who have been well-trained are constantly learning and are constantly on that path. This is something that, you know, is a never-ending quest.
It seems to me the most successful people really were motivated by some sort of failure in their life or their career, and they adjusted and, you know, became even greater after that.
Well, I was let go from my job back in 2002, and I went around and I talked to other people, and it was amazing to find out how many people had, in fact, been let go. So I referenced Leslie Moonves from CBS, who's the CEO of the company. He started out as an actor. I've seen the clips of him on the $6 Million Man where he was playing some patient in a hospital. That was about as good as he could get. He really didn't succeed and took a job so that he could pay his bills, and look where that left him. Buzz Aldrin had a very challenging, you know, despite the fact that he was a true hero by being in that first lunar landing. He obviously had the right stuff to do all that physically and mentally. He's a PhD in astronautics from MIT, super well-trained guy. But after all of the hype kind of came back down to Earth and he was put in a position of actual leadership to run a flight training school, he never had been a leader. He had always been the number two, or had always been a scientist, and he just wasn't able to cope, and he wasn't able to cope with the reduced attention or the attention that he had, and had to ultimately fake and feign a back injury to be able to go into the medical hospital and get some psychological treatment for depression and what turned out to be alcoholism. He has now kicked those habits and is, you know, a proud member of AA and was ultimately named chairman of the, I'll get this wrong, but something like the National Mental Health Institute, for being one of the early folks back in the 70s to come out of that closet and say, hey, I've got this as a condition, and that's pretty impressive stuff. And obviously they had some good, strong moral character, but they faced some tough stuff early on, and they were able to overcome it. And now we look to them, even in Dancing with the Stars, for example. Everybody wants to see the 80-year-old astronaut succeed. that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
There isn't much of a job otherwise for 80-year-old astronauts.
That's for sure.
He's written some best-selling books along the way and is very active in some other things. But, you know, good for him.
We've been speaking with Scott Singer, the author of How to Hit a Curveball, and I think you mentioned the website, but go ahead and mention it again.
Hitacurveball.com, www.hitacurveball.com.
Well, I was leaning in too far. I was thinking curve, he threw me high and tight. I caught a fastball just above the jaw. Since then, I ain't never been quite right. And now there is a ringing in my ears. And I'm always stuck in second gear. Well, you can find me here at the bar. 'Cause I was leaning in.
What a night for baseball, sports fans. Is this baseball or is this Greek tragedy?
That's it for this week's edition of What's at Risk. I'd like to thank our very special guest tonight, Andrea Redman, co-author of Comebacks, and Scott Singer, co-author of How to Hit a Curveball. I'd like to thank our producer, Johnny Pfister of Ringo Studio, and our associate producer, Scott Cooper. We're interested in what you're thinking about. Send us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com and let us know what's on your mind. Be sure to visit the What's at Risk show library at wbz.com. Go to the Watch and Listen drop-down menu, then click on What's at Risk.
You've been listening to What's at Risk, heard every Saturday night on WBZ News Radio 1030 and streaming on WBZ.com.
Run the risk.